Hi, everyone. I'm Jenna Millie with Screenwriting U, and I'm here today with James Vanderbilt, who wrote and directed Truth, starring Cate Blanchett and Robert Redford. Hi, James.
Hey, Jenna, how are you?
I'm great. So good to talk to you again. I think we talked about Spider-Man. Yeah.
I've done this a few times. It's awesome.
This is so different. I'm so excited to hear about your whole process and how you got into this story. So just tell me, how was this an assignment you got, or was this your own passion project?
No, this was my own passion project. This is something I've been working on for about almost 10 years.
Wow.
I first kind of came to it in 2006. And it was in 2004, I don't know if you know sort of the backstory of what the movie's about, but in 2004, 60 Minutes 2 ran a piece on George W. Bush's Texas Air National Guard Service.
Right.
It became this firestorm. And, you know, and the resulting fallout, Mary Mabe, the producer who Cate Blanchett plays, and Dan Rather, you know, who Robert Redford plays, ended up basically losing their jobs over it. That's the very, very quick version. But I didn't see the piece when it ran on Wednesday night, but I certainly heard about it on Thursday morning because it was everywhere. It was this enormous national story. But I didn't think about it as a film until I read Mary wrote a book. About a year later, it came out. There's an article in Vanity Fair that was an excerpt of the book. And read that and then read the book and immediately was sort of struck by how much I didn't know about the story I thought I knew a lot about. And I just became sort of fascinated with Marion, fascinated with the whole story, and called her up or had the agent call the agent. I did that thing and to inquire about the rights. And the word I got back was, you know, she's really not interested in doing anything with the book. And I said, okay. And I said, you know, would it be possible, would she be willing to get on the phone with me? And they said, yes. And so we got on the phone and I said, listen, I completely understand, you know, your sort of, you know, your hesitancy to do anything with anything resembling, big media, you know, after sort of what you've been through, but I'd love the opportunity just to come down to Texas. She was in Dallas, Texas. And sit with you and tell you why I think this could be, you know, a great film. And if you, at the end of that process, still are not interested, I completely understand, no harm, no foul, but I just love to get the opportunity to make the case to your face. And she was gracious enough to say yes. And so my wife, Amber, and I went down to Texas, and my wife is much more intelligent and funny and interesting than I am, so she brought the closer with me. We sat in Mary's living room with her and her husband, Mark Wolfstad, who was a journalist as well. He worked at that point for the Dallas Morning News. And we talked about everything. We talked about our lives. We talked about how we each of us grew up, how we got into sort of our respective professions. We talked sort of about everything but the story, you know, and just kind of got to know each other. And at the end of it, sort of 2 days we spent together, and at the end of the 2 days, she said, look, I certainly don't think you're going to ever get to make a movie about this, but you know, if you're foolish enough to want to try, I suppose, you know, I'll let you take a run at it. And so that's sort of how I ended up with the rights to the book. And you know, they say, you know, the first rule is never use your own money. So of course, I used my own money, obviously. and sort of went from there.
Did you? During those 2 days, did you have a sense of the story or how you would adapt it into a script, or were you just going to see, to meet her and get more information before you went, you know, and did some outlining or sort of walk through the structure?
Yeah, no, I kept really loose really early. I sort of didn't want to lock myself into a particular line of thinking. So certainly when I was sitting with her, I was there to learn a little bit. And also, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, I found, you know, her, you know, as much as I was trying to sort of win her over, I was also kind of, in my own mind, sort of researching her and going, is there a movie here? Is she, you know, a character that, you know, a character, you know, like someone you want to spend time with and are interested in. And, you know, it was an immediate resounding yes, because you meet her and she's witty and charming and caustic and cutting and whip smart and like all of these incredible things. And she has all of these, you know, I mean, she was a journalist for 20 years. You know, she went to, you know, Afghanistan and brought curling iron with her. So, you know, so with the 2 hours of electricity they had every day, she could do her hair. I mean, like, she's just this amazingly, you know, I wouldn't say outsized because it's not like she's like brassy or anything like that, but she's just this incredible individual. When you spend time with her, and I sort of went, oh, this is certainly a character and someone I can write to.
You definitely feel that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, prettier, not at that meaning because I wasn't locked in, but, you know, her book is very much a memoir, and it covers sort of how she got into journalism and how, you know, sort of the 15, 20 years, all the different adventures she kind of had, and then it also covers the Busch Gardens story. And pretty early on, I knew that I was going to have to jettison all of the other stuff and just really wanted the film to focus on the Busch Gardens story just because I wanted the real estate for it. You know, I wanted the movie to be able to drill pretty deep in it, you know, and so I sort of kind of knew really early on that it was going to start with them finishing Abu Ghraib, because I was struck by the fact the story they did right before this was the Abu Ghraib prisoner abuse scandal, for which they ended up winning Peabody. So I mean, it's just this amazing piece of journalism. And you know, to do that story at that time during the Iraq War, there's a lot of pushback. It just sort of was fascinating that this was basically the same team who did that story. Enormous accolades, then immediately went into doing this story in which they basically felt like they walked into a propeller.
And that was what was so amazing. I thought that was an awesome place to start the story because that gives you, you know, tells you how talented they are. How much liberty did you take with what was in the book, or, you know, because the big question is, and the title is, what's the truth? What happened? And you leave the theater wanting to know more about her and more about the process. And it's really hard to figure out what happened or how you should feel about it.
Sure.
Whether or not it was just that she was fired, or whether or not she had made a mistake that she didn't want to admit, and I love the ending. I don't want to blow it for anybody, but, you know, where she stands up and says what she has to say, but what, I mean, how much did you have to, you know, kind of invent to make it work on screen versus what was in the book, or did you stay very close to what you read or what she provided?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing I kind of did was I sort of went, okay, the book is really interesting, but let's put the book away for a moment, because I did want to just rely on that as the source. And, you know, I had written and produced Zodiac, which was very much a similar kind of, it was based on a book, but we did an enormous amount of research and interviewing in terms of putting it together, because you want to hear from everybody that you can and hear different, you know, because this, like that, is at the core of it, there's this sort of this unknowable mystery that people are still very divided about. I wanted to sort of hear from you know, every country, you know, and every sort of, you know, people who disagreed with her, people who were around the story. So I did an enormous amount of that, and talked to people sort of both on and off the record, in terms of, you know, who were either involved with the story, were on the team, involved with the story, were at the network at the time, were just in journalism at the time, were in the military, all facets of it, in order to not just be getting it from one sort of side. You know, so it was never about sort of slavishly following the book, but it was trying to be I knew that we would get attacked. I knew that we would, you know, there would be backlash and all of that. So, you know, I felt, you know, I owed it to the film and to myself to do the legwork. And so I did. And so it wasn't a question in terms of crafting it about inventing stuff in order to make it work as a story, because I think one of the things I found is the story itself is so incredibly compelling, and her journey through it is so incredibly compelling, especially when, you know, I started, you know, hearing about her family life and her father and all of that. And again, not to spoil it for people, but, you know, there's a big emotional component to what she goes through.
Yes.
In this, and I thought that was, you know, and that's all true, too. I mean, that's, you know, sadly, none of that is invented.
It's so awful.
Yeah, down to the comments she reads on the internet are all real internet comments from 2004 that people wrote about Mary Mays. Like, it's just...
And how...
It's all very, very real.
It was so sad. I really was moved by it. And I wanted to know a lot more about her. What was she like during this process? Did she look at pages or notes, or is she still, she seems, just in my opinion, kind of hidden, like she doesn't want to come, doesn't want to have the maybe attention again of the same story. But did that change for her during the process of you guys working on it, and now that the film's out?
Well, she was, you know, I mean, during the sort of working on it, she was great because she would make, I mean, what's interesting is the change I've sort of been able to see in her throughout it, because when I met her, she was really in this, you know, emotional crouch, though. I mean, it was really about a year after this had happened, you know, she was unemployable in the profession that she'd grown up wanting to practice and love and had risen to the top tip of, you know, and just... Just, it was, you know, I can't imagine sort of going through, you know, whatever you think of her and whatever you think of her professionally, whatever you think of her in terms of the story, it's just, you know, watching a person be that beaten down is just, it's not, and meeting them when they're at that place, you feel for them, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so that was kind of how I met her. And she, throughout the process, was very open with me about all of the experiences she had. And, but also knew that there was not going to be an editorial component to this. You know, she wasn't going to get to say, oh, you can't put that in the movie, or you can, you know, she sort of, and I was very clear from the outset, you know, that this was, you know, that I welcomed her into the process and I wanted her thoughts, you know, but it wasn't, we weren't sending her, you know, pages going, what do you think, is this, you know, you know, dialogue work for you, or, you know, anything like that. It was much more of a, you know, and she did read it, she did see it, and she did, so she, I wanted her to know what was coming, because I certainly didn't want her to, you know, I didn't want to show her the movie and be surprised, you know, about some of the stuff in there, because some of the stuff in there is, you know, I don't think she would have chosen to have on film, so I didn't want her to be shocked and surprised by it, as much as I could sort of soften that blow for her, I wanted to be able to, but she was great about it and wonderful. And, you know, now, you know, I think Mary, you know, Mary, like me, is behind the camera, you know, she that's where she likes to be. And so she's done some press for us, which has been amazing. But, you know, I think she is not, you know, she's, there are people who are in front of the camera, behind the camera, and she's a behind the camera type of person.
Right, right. Well, speaking of behind the camera, can you talk a little bit about the casting and how you got this amazing cast, which I thought was incredible, and I totally forgot I was watching Robert Redford, which is how you know he's so amazing. You're like,
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, you're thinking, oh, I'm just watching Dan Rather. It's just seeing that piece of journalism. So how did you take this on as a director? This is your first, like, directing debut.
Well, I sort of knew the only way this movie was going to get made is if we had a sort of an undeniable cast, because it's, you know, not a studio picture. We didn't, you know, we were an independent film. And so I knew we needed to get, you know, sort of great actors who financiers would go, you know what, I want to see them in a movie. So, you know, we'll pay for it. You know, just, I think, a combination of tenacity and luck, you know, I mean, we sent the script to Kate Blanchett's agent, I mean, which is sort of a, you know, I'd love to take credit for, you know, going, oh, wow, you know, I think we're going to take a chance on this Blanchett woman. But, you know, I mean, she's incredible.
And, of course,
and so,
yeah.
Very much to try and get her. And they ended up sending her the script about the morning after she won the Academy Award for Blue Jasmine, which I thought meant we were screwed. I was like, there's no way you win your second Oscar and then go, you know what I want to do now is work with a first-hand director. I think that's really the best route to take my career. But, you know, incredibly she read it and really responded. And we got on the phone and, you know, I just sort of talked through, you know, approach and, you know, sort of how I saw it. And she signed on, which was sort of amazing. And not sort of, it was amazing. And then I knew Robert Redford a little bit. I'd written a script that he had been attached to direct a few years before. So I knew him. And so I knew I could get to him. I knew I could get a script to him. And I wrote Dan with him in mind because I loved the idea of a legend playing a legend. I just thought that, you know, the same thing, like when Robert Redford walks into a room, what happens to that room and the sort of the ripple that goes through the room as people realize he's there and gravity kind of bends towards him a little bit. I swear, I mean, it's, as I've seen it happen, you know, is the exact same thing, you know, if you're in a room with a bunch of journalists, or even not, if Dan Rather walks in, the same thing happens. It's, you know, people kind of go, oh, you know, when you hear whispers, you kind of hear. And so they both, because they both occupy that same sort of place in the American firmament of, you know, both of those voices, you know, came out of our living rooms when we were kids. You know, both of those voices are sort of voices we trust. And so I sort of felt like even though they don't look a lot alike or sound a lot alike, they both have this quality that very, I feel like very few other people have.
Yeah, for sure.
So Bob was always my first choice. And I wrote him a letter. I sent him the script and I wrote him a letter and I said, and I explained, you know, why I thought this could be a great film and why I thought he would be amazing in it. And, you know, talked about All the President's Men and, you know, the idea of him playing a journalist again. And what that would mean and bring to it. And so I just sort of, you know, kind of pitched my little heart out and I think I said please about 10 times in there and he responded. You know, he called me up and said he wanted to do it. And he called me, by the way, which was crazy because that's never, you know, it's always, you know, the agent calling the agent or you get a text or, and this was, you know, my phone rang on a Thursday in my house and it was Bob Redford.
Right.
Jamie, how you doing?
That is so weird. So
it was really wonderful. And then, you know, you get those two actors and then you start going after, you know, Dennis Quaid and Topher Grace, and it just kind of snowballed in a sense of, you know, people, even if they maybe would have had a question about a first time director, they liked the script and then they saw that Kate and Bob were gonna do it and they went, okay, well that's a party I'd like to be at.
That's what it really, the casting was so great. And I loved the way you wrote Dan Rather's part, where he was sort of the nice father figure, because he could have been really hard on her or you could have gone that way. And I loved it that they had a great relationship. So there was this positive relationship to go against, you know, her backstory. And I thought that was so well done. Is that a technique that you thought of, or it just came to you as like a way to bring that character in as him as a mentor?
Well, no, I mean, it was one of those things where, you know, it came out of the research. And one of the things that struck me very early on, before I even met Dan, was the fact that there was never a moment where he went, you know what, I anchored, you know, the news 5 nights a week, and I'm also a correspondent for 60 Minutes, too, and when there's a hurricane or a shooting or anything, I'm on a plane going there, I don't have time to track every single moment of every single story. I leave that to my producers, and so if there was a mistake, you have to, you know, he never threw her under the bus, which I found fascinating, because that would have happened 99% of the time, I feel like, with other people. So from the jump, I was like, there's something about you know, this relationship, and Dan as a person, too, I think it speaks a lot to him as a character. And they'd worked together for a while. And then I spent time with them, and I started to see how they interacted. And how they interact is, you know, they tease each other, and they care for each other. And then I got to know Mary and her sort of history, and I kind of went, okay, wait a minute. And there's a scene in the movie with Elizabeth Moss where she says it, but it actually happened to Mary and I, where she sort of told me about her upbringing, and I said, wait, let me get this straight. You used to get hit in the face for asking questions, and you grew up to be a reporter? And she looked at me, and she went, huh.
Hmm.
Where, thought about it that way before. And for me, I was, that's when the key in the lock clicked for me. And I went, oh, I know what this movie is. I know who this character is.
Wow.
And I know how she and Dan fit together too, because he is, you know, he is that surrogate father figure to her. You know, he is that, you know, that is sort of how they relate to each other.
Well,
as much as maybe neither of them want to admit it.
That was my favorite part about it.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm so
I loved that. Because you don't want to see somebody getting so beat up by every single person, and you just like it if there's somebody you can trust in that's a good guy. And you don't see that a lot in movies. It's usually just like the deck is stacked against the main character. But I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more question for you. I'm sure I'm over time, but I can't help it. It's so interesting to talk to you. If, you know, have written movies like Spider-Man and White House Down. How is the industry receiving you with this, you know, very moving drama? Or has everyone been like, that's awesome? Or have you gotten any sort of stereotyping or pigeonholing into like a big blockbuster movie writer? Or was this hard to do? Or was it easy to jump, sort of change the genre up like that? I think it's so inspiring that you did it.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's one of those things where I really, look, I think that, you know, listen, I'm lucky to be stereotyped at anything. That means they want you to do something, I guess. But, you know, it's like if they want you to, you know, the response has been tremendous. I mean, the response has been wonderful. And, you know, listen, you know, if somebody says, oh, I'm so surprised you made this film, I didn't know you had this kind of tool in your toolbox. I mean, I think you can only take that as a compliment. You know, sort of like,
right.
Going, what? How dare you? Not assume I can do everything. you can only take that as a compliment. And so, but listen, I will say that very early in my career, I mean, I'm just telling you this story. The very first thing I sold was a romantic comedy, and it never got made. And I sold it in 1999, because I'm old, and it was the summer that American Pie came out, and so I went on all these meetings, and you know, the first thing I sold was a comedy, so I was ostensibly a comedy writer,
mm-hmm.
and everything I was pitched was a sex comedy, and I didn't know how to do it, and I kept, you know, going to my manager and go, I can't do this, I don't know how to write markers, even if I took the job, I would screw it up. I can't do it. And he was cool about it, and it was fine, and I kept going to meetings, and that was what there was. And at the same time, I started writing this new script, and it was a mystery. It was a thriller. And I told him, you know, about half the story. He said, look, I'm writing this other thing. And he said, you know, he said, look, I think, you know, you're a comedy writer. You should ride that wave, you know, really, you know.
Right, right.
And I said, okay, well, listen, let me just finish it, and you read it. And if you don't like it, I'll put it in the drawer, and I'll figure out a sex comedy or something like that. And he goes, deal. And so I finished it, and I sent it to him, and he read it, and he said, I think it's really good. I was wrong. I think it's really, really good, and we're going to go out with it. And so we went out with the script and sold it. And the script became, and the movie didn't translate right, but the script got made. And it was turned into a movie called Basic. It was John McTiernan's last film. But I got it made.
Wow.
And it was this lesson incredibly early in my career to not let anybody pigeonhole you or tell you what you can or can't do. It's to sort of follow the thing you're passionate about. And so I've always kind of done that. And sometimes it'll look, you know, my IMDb page looks a little weird, and that's completely understandable. But I love, you know, I grew up with action movies, and I love summer popcorn, but I love serious dramas too. And, you know, it's about, I was, you know, when I wrote, this exact same thing happened to me when I wrote Zodiac. People went, what? The movie I'd written before that, start The Rock, you know, and I'm doing a David Fincher movie, and people are going, wait, what? How is this guy doing that? And then I did Spider-Man, and people went, wait, you're the guy who wrote Zodiac. Why are you writing Spider-Man? You know? So, you know, I just...
You're like, get off my back, people.
I'm so lucky to be things I'm passionate about, you know?
Well, I think it's super, like, inspirational that you can do that, and I think that's great for young screenwriters, because I do hear people saying to me all the time, like, you, this is your first script that got noticed, you need to write 10 more that are like that, and don't deviate from it. So I think it's a great story, and I really appreciate you telling me it. And thank you so much, Jamie. I love talking to you, and I love this movie.
No, me too. I'm always happy when I see your name. I'm like, hey.
Great. Well, I can't wait to talk about the next one, and I appreciate your time so much.
I hope we get to talk again.
Yeah. Let's do it. All right. Well, take care, and thank you again.
Thank you, Jenna. I'll talk to you hopefully soon.
Okay. All right. Bye.